I've heard the word emergency fund tossed around a lot, and that seems like the nice, boring thing to do with it. So how about that?
Hello, and welcome to Financials Podcast Future Rich. I am your host, Barbara Ginty, and I am also a CFP, which stands for a Certified Financial Planner. And I am here today with my guest, Eleanor. Hi, Eleanor.
Hi, Barbara.
Thanks for joining. This is round two because the first time we tried to do this, my internet went down for 5 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, just one of the fun parts of being a podcaster in your... So, Eleanor, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're based, how old you are, what you do, how much you make, all that fun stuff.
Awesome. So I am 23 years old. I'm an electrical engineer at NASA in Huntsville, Alabama. I make about $62,000 a year. It's like 62 and some change. And I'm engaged and getting married this year as well. So I'm engaged to my fiance, who's wonderful, and he makes $82,000 a year, also in the aerospace industry. So yeah.
Awesome. Wow. Smart cookies. So actually, fun fact, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, but we're also two people trying to figure out personal finance, and that's it takes a lot more than smarts to figure out personal finance, I think.
It does. They don't really teach it anywhere. That's the hard part about it.
It is.
It's not like there's like a class on like, okay, how do we do all this personal finance stuff that you're 100% everybody's in the personal finance game, whether you want to be or not.
Yeah. It's like the one thing that connects everyone is we're all trying to figure out how to save money.
Exactly. Okay. So you're engaged and you're getting married this year?
Yes. In December.
In December. Okay, awesome. And are you living together now?
Yes, we're living in an apartment now.
Okay.
But we're also buying a house this year.
Oh, wow. We're going to get a lot of things out of the way this
year. Yeah, you know, just 2020 was awful, and why not make 2021 dramatic, I guess.
I like it. Okay. So then how are you doing expenses? Why don't you walk me through a little bit what the expenses are like now, and when are you moving into the house?
So the house is October-ish. It's a new construction house, so there's always a chance for delays. And, you know, we are used to things being late all the time. It's kind of how engineering works. So we're aiming for October-ish.
Okay.
Yeah. So right now our rent is $1,600. We basically split that down the middle. So on my side, it's $800. And other expenses are $850 for me and... Let's see, where did I write that down?
Okay, so you pay $800 for rent, and then your other expenses, so like cell phone, any sort of streaming service.
Gas, groceries. Yep. Okay.
And that comes, so then your expenses for the month are $1,650.
Yes, yep.
And that's for now. And then what are you bringing in about monthly with your salary?
I'm bringing in $3,100 and some change.
Okay, so I like round numbers, so we'll use $3,100.
Yeah.
Okay, so that leaves you with quite a bit left over. And now in the expenses, do you have any student loans or anything?
I do, but I was one of the lucky ones who graduated in the class of 2020. So I didn't get a graduation ceremony, but I did get forbearance. So I haven't had to start paying those, and they haven't been accruing interest. So okay. They've just kind of been sitting there.
Okay, and how much do you have with your student loans?
So in total, I have $25,000, and they're all direct federal, so they're just handled by a loan servicer, but they're all through the federal government. Perfect. And they have interest rates between like 3.76 up to 5%.
Perfect. Okay. And they're just status quo because they're all in forbearance since they're all government.
Yeah, I haven't wanted to poke them every time because I've thought about, you know, starting payments. I was like, oh, you know, we don't have a house yet. Maybe I'll like get ahead on these. And then it pops up with a warning message that's like, if you take these out of forbearance, interest starts again. And I said, okay, maybe we don't want to poke these yet. We'll wait till September and see what happens. But I have like simulated, they have a tool that allows you to like calculate out what your payment could be. So the hypothetical payment would be, I think, about $230. And since I work for the federal government, I could be eligible for public service loan forgiveness if I stay with them for 10 years.
Perfect. Okay. And so is that your income-based repayment then would be the $230?
Yes, that's the income-based repayment plan. Yep.
And then after 10 years, it would be forgiven with no tax.
Yeah, they'll forgive, I think, about 5,000 of it. And if I wanted to pay the least amount of money, like over the life of the loans, there was another version of it. But I pay way more per month, but they get paid off in like 3 years. And I was like, holy cow, that's insane. Because I didn't think they'd only be 3 years worth of payments. I was expecting 10 years. And I was like, I don't know if I want to pay $600 a month for this, but it might be worth it.
Well, if you could, so you would only qualify for 5,000 of it to be forgiven. Usually with the public service loan forgiveness program, you can have it all forgiven. You just make your income-based repayment, whatever that set number is to,
yeah,
for 2 years, and then the entire amount usually is forgiven.
Yep. And so that's what the amount left would be, is 5,000 and some change. Because if I'm paying 230 a month, which was the income based number, and I do that for 10 years, the only thing left is 5,000.
And then that would be forgiven. Okay.
So it's not capped at 5,000.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I was just making.
Yeah. Sure. All that was left would be,
would be the 5,000.
Yeah. I know 5,000 is like a really weirdly nice number.
So yeah, you do the, and do you think, and it's hard to know, right? But do you think you would be there for 10 years?
I think so. I enjoy my job and it's a cool place to be. So I think it works out. When you work in the federal government, you do take a little bit of a pay cut. That's why my fiance makes like $20,000 more than me, even though we're in the same industry. It's because the federal government pays lower, but you're also paying for stability and really great benefits. So
I was thinking good benefits. Because what would it be? I would imagine, what would the payment be if you were just going to pay it off in 10 years and not do the income-based repayment? Would it be closer to $400 or $500 a month?
No. So that's where it gets almost weird. If I did, there's one where it steps up with like the projected increase of your salary.
Yep.
And I'd be paying like $400 to $500, but they'd be gone in 3 years. It was quoting that they'd be done in, maybe it was 5 years. It was 2026.
Yeah. 2026, 5 years. It makes more sense. Cause if you're paying $400 a month, that's like $4,800 a year in times, let's say 6 years, that would be $28,800.
Yes. And that was also the way that I'd end up paying the least amount of money, because even though I will have money forgiven through public service loan forgiveness, the amount that I pay over the 10 years is just like,
the least
it's amount. Like $400 more than if I just paid them off in five.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. So I think that's something to consider. If you think you're going to stay there, well, we can, let's talk about your budget first, because we have a lot going on with the house and the wedding. But if you think, and you remember, you have to make sure you file the paperwork and stay on top of the public service loan forgiveness program, because it's one of the harder ones to get pushed through in terms of the paperwork. And then we can see, once we see where your budget is, whether or not you want to pursue that or just get it paid off in 10. If you're definitely going to stay, I think it's worth doing the public loan forgiveness program, just being on top of it. I believe you then have to make sure they're all administered by Fed Loan.
Yeah, that's who I'm through, is Fed Loan. So.
Perfect. Okay.
Yep.
So then that should be fine, because then that allows you to pay the least amount monthly and then have that balance forgiven after 10 years.
Yeah. And that's where it was like, I know I'd pay less in like quotation marks if I paid $400 a month and got them done faster, but $400 a month also just feels like a lot more money right now starting out. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. So right now, so then once this, if you were in the IBR, your payment in the future, you know, probably around the time, if you get into the house on time, will be about $230 a month.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And then, so let's talk about your future, since we're future-ish, let's talk about your future budget, because this is a big change to go from, you know, living in an apartment into a house. So it's new build. So you've already purchased it, correct?
Well, we've done the earnest money and we know what the final purchase price is going to be, but it's being built right now. So you cannot sign a mortgage for something that does not exist. Fun fact.
Okay. So how much did you put down for earnest money?
5,000.
Perfect. And then what do they say it's going to be?
The purchase price is going to be about 376, but you can round up to, I don't know how round of a number you want for that.
That's okay. So 376, is going to be your purchase price? And then will they subtract the earnest money from that?
Yes, kind of. This is a question that we had a lot, like 5 years ago, not 5 years, 5 months. It feels like 5 years. So I think what ends up happening with the earnest money is I think it's being held in escrow right now is the term for it. And it will be released back to us and it will kind of count towards as part of the down payment.
Okay. Perfect. And then what are you putting down on the property?
It's about $17,000. So plus, and then with the additional $5,000. So $22,000 total. And maybe more. That's just kind of the bare minimum of what we're projecting right now. But we've also started like trying to put more away. But we'll definitely be in the realm of PMI if we go with a conventional loan.
Right. Yeah.
From that's a conventional like five, lender.
That's a 5-6% down payment.
Yeah.
You have PMI. And then are you looking, what type of mortgage are you looking at? Or what are you pre-approved for?
So, yeah, I think we're pre-approved up to like 385. We tried to give us a buffer because okay. New construction and lumber is ridiculous.
Yeah, so, right now.
Thankfully, they lock you in when you sign your contract. So there are no like, surprise, it costs $30,000 more. So, you know, make that happen. So we signed for a specific price. So we did run the calculations with the mortgage we were pre-approved for and the property taxes here and utilities and insurance and PMI, and all that comes out to $1,250 a month for each of us. So like $2,500 per month for the whole shebang.
For the whole shebang. Okay, great. And did you, what was your interest or, well, you didn't lock in the interest rate, right?
No, we couldn't lock it in. So when we were doing our projections, we put it at 4, right.
Just in case.
Just to be on the high side. That way there are no surprises. We're really trying not to be too surprised this year, but it's a surprising year. So,
well, that's good. I think 4 was a good number because hopefully you can get it in a little lower and then that saves you a little bit.
It's a happy surprise.
A happy surprise. Yeah, good surprise. Okay, so $1,250 each. Okay, so then that's going to bring your expenses up quite a bit from where you were.
Yes, it will. But to be fair,
that's okay.
The rent, the other expenses accounted for like some of the things like utilities and renter's insurance.
Yep.
So it's
that will go
like it's not a perfect comparison. So like my other expenses technically will drop a little bit and the rent will go up a little bit. Yeah, I should have given you a clean number.
Nope.
I didn't write down the clean number.
So if we do $1,250 will be your share, and then let's just say your expenses then are $800 because you're not paying renter's insurance. And you said you included utilities in the $1,250? No, it's PMI, insurance.
It's everything. It's PMI, interest, the principal, interest, utilities, insurance, taxes, and PMI.
Okay.
So it should be everything.
Okay. So then let's assume that your $850 number goes down by $100. So $1,250 plus $750. So let's say you need $3,200. Does that make sense? $50. Well, let's hope it goes down to $3,100 because that's what you're bringing in.
Yes.
And then we still have the loan payment. So
one of the things we did talk about, since we do have like disparate incomes right now, is doing a percentage mortgage where like, because right now it's 75, I'm trying to figure out how to word this in the best way of math, but I make 3/4 of what my fiance makes.
Correct.
So I would cover 3/4 of the mortgage.
Or you wouldn't do $1,250. So he would pay a bit more and you'd pay a bit less to offset the fact that you have less income than he does.
Yes, that's one of the things we've talked about doing. And I've got the numbers for that. Let me pull up the spreadsheet.
Okay, perfect. Because it does seem like depending on how much your $850 monthly expenses go, because that's not including the $230 student loan payment.
Yeah, it seems like the math doesn't add up.
Yeah, the math isn't adding up great. I do think it's a great idea to buy a house. You're young, interest rates are low. You won't waste money on rent. So I do think it's a good idea. We just have to see how we can get the numbers to work so that you can swing, you know, the higher payment and still cover the student loan payment you have coming up and, you know, be even monthly. And then I had another question.
And be able to eat.
Eating is important. I hope food was included in that $800.
It is, yeah.
It is, okay. So let's just say in your $3,100 that you're bringing home monthly for your pay, does that include any work retirement contribution?
It does. I'm contributing 7% right now, and that's with a 4% or 4.5% match to the TSP.
Perfect. Okay, great. So then we're already good for that. So we're doing retirement. So that's fantastic. And then do you have any other savings?
Yeah, I have an emergency fund. I built that up over like the past 5 months. I've just been dumping money into a fund. So I've got, I think, $10,000 in an emergency fund.
Perfect. Okay, that's fantastic. I'd like to hear that, especially with the home purchase.
Yeah, I would not be buying a home if I did not have an emergency fund. I remember my parents stressing out in 2008 about their mortgage payment, and I think it scarred me. So,
hey, it's good.
I've been like scared.
That's good to learn by seeing it and not doing it yourself. Okay, so let's see. What did you guys also talk about if you were going to split the mortgage based on income?
So if we split it based on income, my portion of it drops down to 947. Let me make sure. Okay. Yeah. That's with everything. So okay. Utilities, this the same amount of stuff included, 947.
Okay. So that number seems a lot better, because then with 947 plus, let's just assume the 850 of your, you know, food, gas, living expenses goes down by $100 because no utilities, no renter's insurance. So we add 750 to the 947 plus your $230 student loan payment. That brings in, that brings you to 1927. It puts you closer to where you were with your rent payment, right? Because we're increasing what you were before, which was 1650. You know, adding the student loan payment to that, that's, you know, basically 1900. So that, I think, more reasonable.
Yeah, it makes the numbers positive, not negative, which is always a win.
Always a win when you're doing it that way. Yeah, so I think that number feels a lot more comfortable. Yeah, even if your expenses, the 850 stayed the same, with we'll just say 950 being your contribution to the house, 850 being your expenses, and then 230 being your student loan payment, that brings you to just a little over $2,000 a month. So then that gives you some wiggle room, you know.
Yeah.
Versus,
and we like wiggle room's good.
Wiggle room is great. And then what you could do, oh, I'm sorry, I did your numbers wrong. So 1250, I was wondering why I was like, this isn't making sense. 1250 is your would be your mortgage. 850, let's just assume, are your expenses, plus 230 would be 2000, we'll just call it $350.
So that's if we did half and half, right?
Yep, you did half and half, and you're bringing in $3,100 a month, right?
Yes, so it's not nearly the nuclear option. Okay, I got a little scared for a second when you were like, that's your entire income, and I was like,
what?
Oh, no.
That one you could also do. Obviously, that difference of basically $300, you then would have $700, we'll just say $770 left monthly. So you can do it. But it just depends on what's comfortable for you and your fiance or future husband, how you want to split it up. Because obviously, if you pay a little bit less because your income is less, because you're about 20,000 or exactly 20,000 apart on income, then you have more wiggle room to, you know, do a Roth IRA or to up your emergency fund. And the other elephant in the room that we haven't discussed is the wedding. Is that...
So thankfully, it's not a massive elephant. We have family friends who run a restaurant who are going to let us get married there. So the venue and the food costs are covered. My parents volunteered to pay for that. And since we're getting it at cost without a massive markup, it's much easier to breathe than if we were trying to host a massive wedding at a very expensive place. So it's not terrible. I think the only thing that we're really on the hook for is going to be like the miscellaneous items like invitations, flowers. But my fiance's family has also said like, hey, we'd love to help out. So, it's not going to be too bad. So the way we're splitting it up right now, because we're moving into a house and the house is much bigger than the apartment. And all the stuff we have in the apartments, like, you know, we've carried it from college. So some of it is seeing the end of its life. So we know we're going to have to buy some furniture for the house. So what we're doing right now is rather than trying to juggle like a pie chart of contributions for both of us. My fiance is contributing to like a furniture fund for the house, and I'm covering wedding expenses.
Perfect. Okay. So then I would say, because we have a little bit before we get to the wedding, and he's going to do the furniture, and you obviously have a really reasonable budget right now with your, you know, $800 for the rent and $850 for your expenses versus what you're bringing in. So is that the difference every month? Are you just setting that aside?
Yeah. So I've been putting $500 from every paycheck into my emergency fund. But when do I stop? everyone says an emergency fund's great, and it's, I have it in like a high yield savings account, and like, that's great and all. But at what point do we have enough emergency?
Now, does your husband or future husband have one too? Does he have his own?
He does. He has $15,000 in an emergency fund. We both graduated and said like, okay, he graduated a year before me. So he was like, what do I do with money? And I was like, I've heard the word emergency fund tossed around a lot, and that seems like the nice, boring thing to do with it. So how about that? So he started his, and then as soon as I graduated, I was like, all right, time to start putting money in a random savings account just in case the world falls apart. And would you look at that?
Which it did.
It did.
Emergency fund is super important. It'll be even more important when you own a house. The nice thing is you're doing new construction, so hopefully there aren't any major issues like when you buy something, you know, like the furnace could go or the hot water heater or the HVAC. So everything is new, so you hopefully shouldn't run into too many problems. That being said, I always skew on having a little bit more in an emergency fund when you own a home, because all that responsibility is on you. So I would say, and I would imagine of your $850 of living expenses, some of those could be cut back on if, you know, God forbid you lost your job.
Yeah.
So
yeah, like we do like the meal delivery kit stuff. So like we could definitely spend less if we needed to.
So I would say, you know, 6 months is a good number and you're almost there. So I would shoot for 12,000, mainly just having a little bit more of a buffer, because that would be six months at like 2,000 a month for costs, assuming you're paying the 1250, which, you know, maybe that will be switched around to be 950. But I think 12,000 would be a good number as a homeowner. And since the other thing you need to consider now with this mortgage payment is if, God forbid, anything happened to your future husband, how would you handle the mortgage payment? Are you guys getting life insurance on each other?
I don't think we have thought about that yet.
Oh, okay. So because it seems like if you do it 50-50 or, you know, 40-60 or however you decide to end up splitting it, It's a big number for everything if you had to carry that on your own, right? With the $3,100 coming in, if you had to carry the full amount.
Yeah.
So one thing you can consider, obviously if something happened for him, you could always do a roommate or something like that. But obviously one other way to prevent kind of a second tragedy, right? Obviously losing a spouse would be a tragedy, but preventing a financial issue would be you could each have term insurance on each other, which is temporary cheap insurance, and you could get it. And if you're going to get it, I would say get it for a little bit more than whatever the mortgage is, so that you could keep that term insurance for the next 30 years and it would cover whatever your needs are for that time frame. But then that way, God forbid, if anything happened to either one of you, you could keep the house.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially because even if one of us did have to sell it, like apartment rent is only going up too. So we're very used to like having two people to cover everything, which has been nice.
Which is great. Yeah. And then that way you don't ever have to worry about it, because the last thing you want to do is lose a spouse and then have to put the house up for sale immediately in order to cover, you know, to fall behind on it. And term insurance is really affordable, like a 30-year-old, and you're not even 30. So you're going to be under 25. So it should be super cheap. But a 30-year-old, you can get, I think it's $1 million for $100 a month.
Okay.
So you could look at it, and they do it online. But I would do what's called level term, or consider doing level term, sometimes the banks will actually have you take out declining term insurance, meaning that they take it out for the amount of the mortgage and on each of you. And so as you pay off the mortgage, you have less insurance to protect them.
Okay.
So I would look at level term, at least for the period of the mortgage, just so that if God forbid something happened, you know, the house could get paid off, and then that wouldn't be a worry.
Yeah.
And it might even be, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, it might even be less than, that was a million, you could do 500,000, it might only be 50 bucks a month or 40 bucks a month or something.
Yeah, it sounds, we'll have to go to a website and start plugging in numbers, I'm sure. That's like, that's the story of everything. It's like, oh, you want a mortgage? Go estimate it.
Yeah. So that's one thing, that's definitely one thing I would consider. That's the only like big thing I'm seeing, is just with getting into the mortgage and just starting out your careers, that could be, if God forbid something happened to one of you, that would be tricky.
Yeah, for sure.
And then so once you get the emergency fund up to, and obviously no one likes to do life insurance, right? But you just do
it's hard to think about when you're 20. I know. You're like, what could happen, right?
I know, I got my first policy term insurance at 28, and I had just bought the business. And somebody was like, what's your succession plan? I was like, I am the succession plan. Like, I purchased a business. And they're like, well, what if you get hit by a car tomorrow? And I'm like, well, that's statistically unlikely. And they're like, it is statistically unlikely, but like, this is what you do for a living now. Like, just like, hope it works out. And I was like, oh. So, yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah.
It's statistically unlikely, but God forbid. And then you do it once and you're done in 30 years. You probably won't even need to have it, because we'll make sure you do a good job saving. So yeah, look online for that. And then I would do the emergency fund up to 12,000, which you, it sounds like you'll be there in about a month. If you're doing 2 months, you'll be doing 500 pay periods. So you'll have $2,000 in the next 4 pay periods. And then from there, are you going to be putting some more money away for the house and the wedding expenses then?
Yeah, that's kind of the idea. Okay. Is just to take whatever's left over and push it into an account, and just, it's not an emergency fund, so just be ready to spend it for wedding. It's really tough when you put money aside in a savings account, especially when you've been saving up for an emergency fund. It feels almost wrong to like spend it.
That's a great point.
Yeah, I know. You're like, well, it's everything, just you just keep putting it away and you kind of hoard it. So yeah, that's the plan, is to just take, and like, I guess, so when it reaches 12,000, am I like done with the emergency fund?
You're done for now. If you guys have kids down the road, you might want to bulk it up a little bit more. But at that point, like, you both have, you know, between the two of you, if he has 15 and you have 12, you have a good amount of money in cash available for emergencies. So.
Yeah. Okay. So then I can just take whatever contributions I was making to that and start dumping it towards houses and weddings and other large expensive things we decide to buy.
And then I would,
I don't know what else is on the list.
I would even consider maybe doing a Roth too when you get done with the wedding, because you're going to have that extra cash flow that you're used to saving. You could consider doing maybe like $300 a month.
Ooh,
a Roth.
That was one of my questions. Is it better to bump up my TSP contribution or to start a Roth?
So there is no perfect answer to that. It depends on who you talk to. I think because you can afford it right now, where you have that wiggle room, because you, depending on how you split this up, you'll still have extra money monthly, especially once you get through the wedding and getting into the house. I would, and especially if you end up doing 950 for your contribution, you're already putting in 11.5 into your TSP. So that's a good contribution amount. And then if we added a Roth to it, we could get your savings ratio up a little bit higher. So let's just say, yeah, we could get your savings ratio up another 3% by doing a Roth.
Okay, cool.
And then you have both, or maybe even a little bit more. But then you have a really high savings ratio, which if you've, you know, I'm sure you've listened to the pods and other people have listened to the pods. I'm a big advocate for front loading your retirement and putting as much away in retirement in your 20s as you can. Because my attitude is, you know, you're not at the highest.
Yeah, because you have another 10-year cycle. Yep.
Exactly.
I've heard that
and you're
a
not,
lot.
You're not in the, you know, like everybody's just starting out. So everyone's kind of in the same boat. You also were just out of college. So you're used to like living on less. So rather than increasing your lifestyle now that you have a job and you're making more, kind of keep that like college mentality and sock away a ton of money I mean, it literally makes a huge difference. A huge.
Yeah, that's actually what I did, because I started out as an intern with the government, and I was getting paid like $32,000. So when I got up to being paid full time once I graduated, we changed the rent ratio because I was paying less on rent because I was making like half of what my fiance was making. And I was like, please, $800 a month is like murder. so that's why we've done the income based like mortgage / rent payments before. But I got another promotion recently, and it was like maybe $5,000 a year, but I just took all that money and I upped my retirement.
Amazing.
It was like, I think you said it in a podcast that like when you get those little itty bitty incremental raises, you wouldn't really notice they're there. So you definitely wouldn't notice if they weren't there. And that has been my experience with it. I have not missed the $60 or so. So
that's perfect. So yeah. And keep doing that. And if you, the more like, you know, I was super extreme. I think I saved like, I don't know, 30% of my income or something crazy. Cause I was like, I'm already going to be broke. Like it's not like
might as well be you'll be future rich.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And so
roll credits.
So what I would do is if I were you, because you can afford it, like you have the wiggle room in your budget where you can do the Roth, you don't have to have it all be pre-tax. I was just gonna say if you did like $200 a month in the Roth, that would work out to be about $2,500 a year, and that gets your savings ratio up to 15%.
Okay. Yeah.
So I would do that. And then you're already in a house, which is a huge advantage, you know, that you're going to be not paying rent. You're going to be, you know, building equity on a property, and you already have the emergency fund. And then I would do the public loan forgiveness. So then that way that allows you, rather than making a $400 a month payment for a student loan, you're paying $230 and the other $200 is going into a Roth.
Yeah. And it's making money instead of. Yes. Yeah. Because that's the other thing. I did think about that because my loan interest rates are relatively low. So it doesn't make sense necessarily to dump a bunch of money into them if that money could make more money somewhere else.
Yeah, you don't have an incredible amount, thank God. So I think you're better off, and you work for the government. And so I would take advantage of that program. And then rather than making that higher monthly payment, I would split, you know, allocate it as if you had that $400, but the rest of it goes into a Roth.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds good. Oh, and the only other thing that could throw an entire wrench into this is like my 10-year-old car. But so far we're kicking, so we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to jinx it.
Yeah, and then worst case, what you could do is you could pull a little bit out of the emergency fund to put money down on it and then replace
it. Yeah, because it would be a true emergency.
It would be, because you have to get to work.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I think 2020 was really, really nice to my car. And now that I'm having to drive it again, it's a little annoyed at me. But that's okay. We're doing good. It's still kicking.
Fingers crossed on that one. But yeah, that would be my plan. Get the emergency fund up a little bit higher, especially considering you might have to get a car. And then focus on the wedding and the house. And then after that, I would add a Roth in. So we get the retirement savings ratio up with the match like to 15%. And then... yeah, I would sock money away while you're in your 20s. It was like the best thing I ever did.
That is my goal.
Perfect.
So that's what we're aiming for, and we're just trying not to do too many large financial moves in 1 year. Yeah. So
we'll definitely have to have you back on in a year, because it'll be interesting to see where you are after you get the house, the wedding. It's a lot of things.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see where I am in a year.
Well, Eleanor, thank you so much for coming on. It was great to have you.
Thank you for having me. This has been, it's been really helpful just to have a plan for what's going to happen in the next 12 months, because a lot's going to happen.
Yeah, this is a busy year for you.
Yeah.
Well, so for all of our lovely listeners, you can find our most up-to-date news on our Instagram, Future Rich Podcast, or on our website, www.futurerichpodcast.com. And our classes are still free, and they are in partnership with SUNY Ulster, which can be found on our website. Thanks for listening.